Yo, BJ, can you hear me?
All right, here we go, man.
All right, let's try again. All right,
if the screen, is it because the screen blacks out or something? You know, like when it goes to sleep, it shouldn't be, right?
If it does that, it should just be kind of like, it shouldn't disconnect us though, but I don't know.
Okay, but maybe I'll keep tapping on it though.
Right. All right, cool. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Envy Podcast. And before we get started, I just want to say thanks to everybody that's been supporting Season 1 all the way through Season 10. And by the time you guys hear this, this is actually Season 10, Episode 10. And, you know, when I first started the show 4 years ago, I really dedicate this to the fellow MCs and fellow indie artists that I've come across with in this journey on the road in this lifetime, man. And this next sister right here, I've been getting booked with her for the same shows for about 2 years now.
I first
met her at Huntington Beach. Shouts to DJ Chaos. I remember rocking an open mic with her at the Gemwork show. And, you know, these last couple of years, I've seen her progress so fast. Like, I see her rocking Memphis. I see her rocking, by the time you guys hear this, she already would have been rocked Trill Festival in Phoenix. And, you know, I see her rocking a lot of shows, and I'm super proud of her. For all those who got Spotify and Apple Music, y'all got to check out the two albums that's available. Y'all got Alive on 2000. She dropped Alive in 2004, and then 2006 she dropped Stepping Stone. And one of the newest singles she got is called Perspective with Vince One. I got a chance to see her do this joint live this past Friday at the Pike in Long Beach, and the music video is coming out. And one more single she got Soy Mexicana available on all streaming platforms. And without no further ado, we got Miss BJ Blunt in the house. What's up, BJ?
Hey, what's good, man? That was a great introduction, dude. And it's the vibe is equally exchanged, bro. Like, you've been nothing but good energy since the day I met you. And, you know, it's always a blessing to rock with some, you know, real humble MCs and you know, keep up with the culture and you know, just have a message 24/7, you know, message from kids to women to men to, you know, just for everyone. And you brought had a show just last weekend. You killed that, man. It was dope. I love that vibe. It's just, I mean, from reggae to shit. You really did that.
Thanks,
I waited
BJ.
You cussing because you know I'm foul mouthed.
Yeah, you can. You can say whatever you want. Yeah,
okay,
good.
Sweet.
So
my
BJ,
dogs might chime in too.
So BJ, I asked all my guests, where were you born and raised?
I was born in East LA, raised in East LA.
No doubt. Yeah. As far as like mom's side or dad's side, was anybody involved in music? Was anybody musically inclined with either side of the family?
Actually both sides of my family. My aunts actually played guitar. My uncle was a one-man band. Rest in peace to him. But yeah, they're very musically inclined. Musically inclined, yeah.
Well, tell me about growing up in East LA. What was that community like as far as you can remember in your, like, let's say like your elementary, junior high years? How was that like?
It was fun, bro. It was living. It was, big time. It was like interaction, community, unity, you know. We always uplifted one another. We didn't allow bullying or negative talk. You know, it was always like the si se puede, can do attitude, you know?
Yeah.
And that was the best because you just knew you didn't, there was no much like self-doubt. Now I think social media plays a big role in that.
Yo, BJ, we good?
Hey, it hooked up to my part. I mean, my my AirPods.
All right, let's see if this works better. All right,
so this ain't going to sleep.
So let's pick up where we left off. So I ask you, like the community of East LA, what do you remember about that community? Let's say like your junior high years or elementary years.
Side of sports, I just remember just getting into the hip hop scene, and I remember us doing a side of, I mean, if you're talking social or just within the school and stuff, we did a lot of hip hop. We were introduced to a lot of, you know, the old school hip hop and stuff, and La Rap Bass, and we were just all into dancing and break dancing, the cardboard, like everything was all about, you know, it was always surrounded by hip hop, regardless of what was going on, like at a social level, you know what I mean, or political level and things like that, because we did have Cesar Chavez march the streets as well, though, you know. But I think back then it was the if we're speaking on a social topic, it would be more of a trying to unite the black and the brown. Because mm-hmm. back then, you know, the gangs and that type of stuff was more prevalent than it is now. So I would say it was just a mixture of all those things, trying to create unity between black and the brown through hip hop, which was dope, you know, keeping to the culture. But I also, there was also the Mexican culture there. So I had a bit of both. I was able to experience my own, our culture. And then with hip hop, through hip hop is how I was able to unite with black and brown, you know what I mean? And everybody, really. Hip hop unites everybody, because you're Filipino, I believe, right?
Yes, ma'am, no doubt.
Yeah, so it was just a thing of, it was predominantly Hispanic, or, well, Mexican there, right? Like, there's Latinos, pure Latinos. But then as I started to enter high school, we had different races coming into the projects, and, you know, it started to build that way. And it was cool, you know. We never really looked at that, but we knew that it was an issue, like gang-wise, you know, where things of that nature happened there as well. But I kind of kept to sports and everything that would keep me out of trouble, in other words, because it was very easy to get in trouble there.
No doubt. And I know before we got cut, you were saying something about community, and you were saying it was important for you guys to look out for each other and make sure nobody was getting bullied, right? Can you expand a little bit more on that, on the community, or the importance of community in East LA?
It was very important, to be honest with you, because there was a lot of people that, you know, they were experiencing different things at home. So you had to have more consideration and be more empathetic towards, you know, some people didn't have mothers, some people didn't have fathers, some people, their parents were on drugs, you know, and some people got bullied for it because they were either neglected or, you know, whatever those things that came with it. And so we always protected them. We made sure that nobody picked on people. And that was just unacceptable to us, that, you know, to be a mean person or to bully someone and think that that's okay and take pride in that type of action. So, it was an innate thing. It was, we all just knew that that was wrong.
Did mom and dad meet in East LA?
No, they actually met in, I want to say, San Diego.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know how they ended up migrating to East LA from SD, or what was the story behind it?
Well, my grandpa is born in SD. From my dad's side, my grandma's born in Arizona and my mom's born in Sacramento, but work and, you know, meeting and they were in Mexico as well, which is Sonora, Mexico. My mom was a traveler, my grandma was a traveler, so they met as teens, got married, and then my mom was already from here, and both of my dad's parents were from here. So, you know, they were able to come and start their own farm and stuff in Hemet. And they actually stood in Hemet. But be it that my grandpa was from San Diego, I believe my mom says she met him there. So
I love it.
Yeah. And then you're from San Diego, right?
I I grew up in Oxnard, but I've been living in San Diego for the past almost 15 years.
You did say that. Spins. That's 805, right?
Mm-hmm. But I was born in the Philippines. But I grew up in Oxnard. Yeah.
That's awesome. Have you went back?
Yeah, I actually went back.
I heard it's beautiful.
After like my after college, yeah, I came home for like 3 months. I went back to visit. Yeah.
That's awesome. I was back. I know it's about you, about me, this interview, but I like to kind of feel both people out. Like,
oh, it's all good.
Dope. Hell
it's
yeah.
All good.
That's what's up.
Yo, let me ask you this. What was the first hip hop song that you heard that really like impacted you? Like, wow, like when you heard that, you're like, all right, I want to be an MC.
Craig Mack, Playboi.
Right on.
Yeah, it was just one of those, like, my friend put it on. She used to DJ for K-Day, and I was always writing, and she, like, tried it, you know? She put it on, like, for me to try it to it. She's like, yo, and we did end up doing this little Sprite commercial song, and she did the beat, and she used to DJ for K-Day as the mixtress, yeah.
Wow.
So it was, yeah, but we played softball together. Dope. She's dope. First baseman. You know, we used to get down together, and she was always into it. And I went to her pad one day, and she just had all the stuff. And I was just like, dang, this is dope. So she got me into it and stuff. And it's been history since then. I found love that moment because I didn't believe I could do that, you know, until someone saw that gift in me. And I mean, I loved hip hop, don't get me wrong. I used to do talent shows, but dancing wise, I used to dance with like my little brother, and he used to choreograph it. And then once that, you know, she was, you know, always like music, I mean, who don't, right? But hip hop was like the genre that just pulled me in the most. And that the rest was history. After that, we did a Sprite commercial song, you know, because back then it was, you know, you wanted to do a commercial for somebody. So we were trying to get in the industry that way. She was in the industry, but I was trying to get in the industry, and she was trying to help me get into the industry. So that was super cool, you know, that she saw that. And I owe her that, like, forever, you know?
I love it, man. So let me see. What would be your top five albums that really influenced your style as an artist? Who would be, like, that? What are the albums that really helped shape
you? You're gonna laugh because most of them are in hip-hop.
All good, all good.
Yeah, I would say every last one of Tracy Chapman's albums. Mm. That's like my favorite artist of all time. What other? Immortal Technique.
Right on.
He's definitely on my top five. Nas. Let's see. Who else? Just all their shit. Because there's not just one album. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just really dig all of their music. So, dang, I don't have many because I really don't. I try not to listen to too much hip hop, so it doesn't influence my stuff. So I'm pretty much like neo soul type, you know. But I would say Immortal Technique for sure, or Tupac always, you know, because he came with it, and a little bit of Jay-Z. I like Jay-Z. His stuff works for me. You know what I'm saying? In right a sense on. Where. Not so much what he's saying, but his cadence and his creativity. Like, I take that from artists. Sometimes I'm not even so tripped on what they're saying, because sometimes it's not my cup of tea, so to speak. But I will never, like, say, oh, that's not great work, because it is a great body of work, you know? It did great for him. And who else would I say? There's not that many, really. Yeah. Vince One, for sure. Vince One, bro. Like, you got to listen to his shit. He influences me on a daily basis since the day I met him. Him and all the squad, obviously, like Tech, Super Latin, Random, Area 51, you know. Though all of their stuff is just amazing, bro. It's just such creativity. Mainstream, I would say maybe those three artists, like Immortal Technique, Tupac, and Jay-Z, just for the creativity and his cadence and everything. I really like it.
I love
it. Not to mention, he was born on my birthday. And cool. All the other albums with Jay-Z.
He was?
Yeah.
December 4?
All the other, yeah.
Tight.
Albums are, she got so many of them. I would say they would all be pretty much Tracy Chapman. She just speaks to my soul.
Nice. So let me ask you this. At what point did you start, like, at what point did you start performing? Was it, did you start performing first or recording first? Which one did you start doing?
That's an awesome question, man, because I started performing first.
Right on. At what year? What year did you really start hitting the stage?
I would say 1990, like end of 89, 90.
Wow. Who would be some of like I know when you were building in Long Beach, you were telling me some of the major artists you've opened up for. Like, who are some of the artists you've done shows with in the 90s?
I would say was Naughty by Nature.
Wow.
Next, TQ. I did the Reyes Brothers. I was rocking the Key Club a lot, you know, through Sean Healy. Went through them a lot. But the other ones were through a record label that we did. We're doing like the House of Blues and stuff, high schools. It was fun, man. It was, that was living, you know what I mean? That's all I was doing. So it was shit.
I did one show with Sean Healy. He got me to open for Guru from Gangstar back in like 06. Maybe 05. Maybe 05.
See what it is. So you see what I'm saying? Yeah. Was a little after I started with Sean Healy. So he was a few years later, but he's the one that, you know, I was able to sell out and get people to come out. Because back then, you know, it was different. Like, we didn't have social media. I think MySpace was barely coming out, right?
Yeah.
Or something like that. It was years later, like by the time Sean Healy was around. Well, that I discovered him.
let me ask you this. Let's talk about your first album, Alive. You dropped it in 2004. What are some of the memories that come to mind when you think about that first album?
The airport.
The airport.
I wrote that whole album working at an airport.
Which airport?
Graveyard, our Ontario airport.
Nice.
Yeah, and it was like we would take them to. I had to supervise a lot, so we would take them to the in a shuttle. I wouldn't, but the guys would take them to the airport, and I remember writing the whole album there. I had the time to. I said I had the time to. It was like it was nobody there. It was literally just supervising a lot.
What are your favorite songs from that album?
That's a good question. What would I say? Let me see. That's interesting. I never thought of those questions. Let's see. Dang, on Alive. I would say dang, that's a really good question.
Or just give me one.
I'm not like really I tell people I don't even like to hear myself sometimes. It's funny, but I would say because I produced the majority of them.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. And you hear how different it is, like you were telling me, from then till now. So I feel like I've grown much from then. Like vocally, cadence-wise.
Even
beat-wise.
Your voice on the 2004 album, it was, you can tell somebody was young, full of life and full of positivity, and then when they hear your music now, your voice has more grit and pain, which is a good thing, You know, it's a good thing that your voice sounds like this now. I feel like it's two different artists vocally. And I do feel like when artists go through something, their voice changes. I truly believe that, dude. Like, so yeah, go ahead. That was my observation.
Yeah, totally. I agree with you. Shoot, because like back then it was all excitement and creativity and the abstract. And I was just always really unique because they wanted me to do other stuff that I really kind of feel that didn't fit me, you know? So I just kind of stuck to what I know, what felt right for me, I guess, you know? And yeah, no. I would just say, I guess I like them all, to be honest with you. There's not one favorite or the other. It just depends on the experience, like the studio experience. That really means a lot to me. Like when I can sit there and create with someone, because I did have co-producers, don't get me wrong. Like they put the strings in and I really just did a lot of the drum patterns and stuff. So I guess the experience for me would be literally like in the studio, you know, like Well All Right, you know, the song Well All Right.
Yeah.
I love that song. I would add certain people and it's like not comedy, but like a daily living, you know, like I knew the kid, he's like, Well All Right, you know, and I put it in because it sounded right. And it's just like, it just happened one day, and then I took it to the studio. I made the beat. All of a sudden, it was something, you know. It came true, and I liked the beat. And so, Well All Right is one of my favorites, I guess I would say. I like the way it all went down.
When did you start making beats?
Oh, since day one, I would say. I was always interested because I played the clarinet and a little bit of sax in junior high.
Wow.
Yeah, and the piano's kind of like, once you get the melodies and, you know, you feel that vibration, you kind of can, I can play little riffs on guitars and stuff, but really with the keys, I'm better, and I really do love the black keys.
So
a lot of my stuff is, solely black keys, the black keys.
Mm-hmm. So what equipment were you using to produce the first album? Like what... Like, did you have that in the ASR? Was it a sampler? Were you on the MPC?
Yeah, everything. MPC, the MPC 3000, 1000. And we had the MoFab, the rack mounts, you know.
Wow.
We had that. Yeah, no, it was a full-blown studio. We had just about everything. We had the JBL speakers, we had the Roland keyboards. We had a Korg keyboard. Right now, I'm messing with an Akai keyboard. I kind of minimized. I donated my equipment to a nonprofit that was supposed to be working with kids, teaching them like how to get into music and stuff like that. So I donated that keyboard. That was a Roland. I had a Roland. And but no, back in the studio, I mean, it was a full-blown studio. I just found my ADATS to an album that hasn't even been released.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. And that was like the first, after I did the Sprite song and started messing around and recorded a song called East Coast, West Coast. It's called What's Going On, really, but it's when the East and the West Coast were battling. So I did that. I did a song that I didn't release, and then a whole album that I didn't release until I did the 2004 and 2006 kind of life, you know, became life in between all that. I stepped back from music for a while to live life a little bit, and because I felt like I was pushing, and you know, an artist doesn't have to be a struggling artist, but sometimes we don't get that, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So when I was young, I mean I got it because I always had jobs and stuff, but I know that I wanted to I could have been doing more and not just, you know, as myself. I say I could have been doing more for myself as opposed to I don't know, seeking support, you know, in places where maybe it should have been sought, just right. being 100, you know. Just as a, now that I'm older, I'm like, oh shit, was I a burden? Even though they may say no, for that question to even come into my mind means like I might have been leaning on somebody, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
Let's fast forward a little bit to your 2006 album, Stepping Stone. Now, yeah. with this album, and I was listening to it, it totally sounds different from the first one. I felt like the beats were a little harder. It got a little bit. It got a little bit more boom bap and a little bit more darker too, as far as content. And what's your memories that come to mind making that album?
Stepping Stone was like a Alive was like telling people I'm alive. These are my thoughts. This is like what I see. You know, the things that could be fixed. Self, a little bit of self reflection. Stepping Stone was. It was like my stoner fucking album, you know, like all that you could tell since 1974. So that was like the stoner album for sure. That was my stoner days and like super stoner days that I was like, I'm a tweeted and what, you know. So that one was more like, and then to also receiving as a female MC, receiving like the negativity and the competition type stuff, you know, and I was just like, man, whatever. So then you don't physically, obviously you don't go after people, but it's like that, not even battle rap, but it's like the fuck you, you know, type shit. So that had a little bit more of that in it. And I'm not gonna front on that. That's what I was just telling Vince about, that like at that point, you know, I knew, you know, we start off knowing why we do things. And sometimes we get distracted with other things. That's why they say concentration or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's as far as I went, though, you know, was the weed and things like that. But now my content is more about, because I've done a lot of shadow work since then and I've grown a lot. Obviously, I'm not like super young, you know, so. Now it's about shadow work, about uplifting, inspiring, being inspired, which life itself, you know, inspires me to do. Because everybody, like I tell everybody, people like, who inspired you? And I'm like, life, dude, because without it, I wouldn't have experiences, you know. And other people, they're very inspiring based off their stories as well. It's like a truth and an experience that could be shared. And I think that's exactly what music is. Like it's a shared experience of self, pretty much, and our own creation.
So both albums were put out by Jadestone Records.
Yeah.
As far as your experience being under a label and someone putting it out for you, what did you learn about the game working with them?
That you can do a lot as a team, for sure. Yeah, totally. It's always, for me, I'm going to always look at it, although like things didn't work out. It was just full effort on everyone's part, putting it in, you know, like I turned around two albums in a very short amount of time, and they got like 16-17 cuts on each one, you know, so we were doing a lot of music. And just, you know, down to doing our own shirts, like pressing our own shirts, and not, no, silk screening our own shirts. Everybody did their own, you know. We did our album covers. It was cutting the album covers, putting them in everything.
What did you, DJ, would you say they got 16-17 points on each one, would you say? Or
they got, oh, like each album was like 16-17 cuts per album.
Oh yes, no doubt. Yeah. No doubt. Yes, it was. So, yes, it was.
Yeah. So we were working like mad working, you know, and I was I had no complaints. That was like when I lived most in the studio, you know. Well, now I have one at home, so it doesn't matter, but back then I traveled and on a daily. After the graveyard shift, it was like I got another one, you know, go make a beat or have the beat already made. And then I would get this producer named Einstein, I mean, amazing producer, and he would just go and add all the extras, the little bells, the whistles, the strings, the anthemic sounds, and it was amazing. It was super amazing. Anthemic tune is another song that I like a lot. You know, but yeah, it did turn like super boom bap. I just went back to that because I did hear it when I mentioned that song right now. I'm like, okay, from that to that, it is a big difference, you know?
Man, so, like, you know.
That's interesting. You caught that. That's what's up, bro.
So,
sorry,
like,
my brain's all over the place, too.
It's all good.
Like a motherfucker.
You know, like, coming from the underground scene myself and being an indie artist, you know, like, I put out my first album in 2006. So when I was talking to you in Long Beach and kind of just like doing some more research, because, you know, before I interview my guests, I got to do my thorough research too, and also get to know them a little bit off camera or off air, you know, like. So right. I was really proud of you when I found out your first album came out in 2004. And you know, it's like this, right? With all due respect, it's like it makes BJ more of an OG than me. Because my first album came out in 2006, you know what I'm saying? So, like, yeah. What I'm saying, aww. I guess what I'm trying to say is, man, we've been putting in work for decades, you know what I'm saying? And that's awesome. And that makes us like really truly evolving artists. Like we evolve and we grow and we change with the times, you know?
Thank you. And we're still going.
We're still growing. We're still learning.
Yeah. And strong too.
Yeah, man. And you know, we were talking about life and how sometimes it can distract us. So what's the farthest you stepped away from the music business? What's the longest you stayed away from it?
Dude, close to a decade.
And why is that?
I just felt like I was finding myself in other ways. Like I said, the struggling part, you don't have to be a struggling artist. So I went to school. I got a degree as a computer tech. So
good for you.
Yeah, thank you. And then I started a business and I just went a whole different route because I had that weight on my shoulders, not knowing I could have done both, you know. But at the time, I think I was so young and I was like, you know, I got to get things right. I don't know. We pressure ourselves so much, I think, for no reason when we could just take it one day at a time, you know, and not think so far into things. But me, I'm a freaking thinker. So I was always thinking of those type of things. I didn't want to be a burden. I didn't want to do this. I like music takes a lot of, you know how much time it takes for me. It takes a lot of time. Like, so it's super time consuming. And be it that I'm like ADHD, that's hard to, I'm still managing that part of myself, you know, at an older age. I don't know if it gets worse. For the most part, at least I could identify, you know, the types of things that distract me and detour me. And that was one of them. It was like a get it together in a different sense, because I've always been a hustler. So I've always been like, I want my business, I want to create jobs for people and things of that nature. So when I did get the computer shop, I had students from school come so I could teach them all the things that they didn't teach me at school.
So,
you know, like game counseling, self-care, and just all the things that come with the electronics. Someone brought me a fridge book and I fixed it.
I love it.
It was an electrical issue, but, you know, I don't know. Those type of things. So, you know, when you get good at things like that, people have faith in you, you know? And as an artist, it's the same thing. Like when you're so good at what you do or you're so concentrated and focused on it, they can see that you put that much time and they want to hear your work, you know? They want to hear what you have to say. They want to know like how much you've grown as well. I know when I listen to someone, I like you just see the growth. You're like, oh dang, like you went the right way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You studied it, you practiced it, and it's a mastery, you know, of your of your craft.
Oh man, thank you.
Yeah, for
it's
sure.
It's like I could honestly say I've been going hard at it since 2005. Took a little break in 2018 to 2019. Just took 1 year break from the shows, but always kept, you know, dropping albums, mixtapes almost every year. If I didn't drop an album, I definitely dropped a mixtape. And what I was thinking to myself is, you know, like DJ, like I definitely gave my 20s away to hip hop.
That's what I'm saying. Exactly.
I definitely gave my 30s away for sure. Two decades are gone and went straight to hip hop. Like, yep. I'm turning 40 in about 3-4 months, and like I just look back at the last two decades. Where did my life go? Oh shit! I gave it to hip hop, and like,
yeah, you know, there's no right there, bro.
And there's nothing wrong with growing out of it. There's nothing wrong with falling out of love with it sometimes, because if you're gonna do something for at least more than one decade, there's gonna be ups and downs, dog. There's gonna be days where you love it, and there's gonna be days where you hate it, and that's when it becomes a real relationship with hip hop. And check this out,
the marriage.
I've been there, I've done that, left, came back again. You know, like no. I know how
totally.
It is.
And there's nothing wrong. I tell people there's nothing wrong. They're like, damn, you were gone for that long. I was like, yeah, in the midst, I was in and out, dipping in, but not like hardcore where I'm just like, dude, I just want to do this. This is my love. It's like playing softball, right? So now I have a torn meniscus. And my right leg's all jacked up, so now I can't play softball all the time. I would play seasonal all the time just to keep me in shape, you know. And now that that's jacked up, these are like my loves. You feel me? That's like a hobby, but it's a love that I play wholeheartedly. I love it. I love playing softball. I play co-ed. I play shit. I'm the only girl on the all men's team. You know, but once you get injured, like everything was just back to writing. Anytime I feel something, anytime I'm going through anything, the only way I can express it is through music, you know, and it's not the emotion. It's not because I'm a girl, so it's not the crying. And you don't go through all those. You just it's like your higher self talking to you, you know. That's how I look at hip hop. It's like within us, I say, as an artist, like it's like my higher self always talking to me, knowing that I you know, thoroughly and fully fucking respect the culture of hip hop, like no culture vulture shit, you know what I mean?
No
and
doubt.
I want to put out a message that any child could listen to. And like you said, like on my second album, The Stepping Stone, that was all me. That was all ego, you know? And I grew from that big time. I was like, yeah, I can't be doing that. You know, I can't be... I mean, yeah, I smoke bud, whatever, but I ain't gotta be out there constantly, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Making whole-ass songs about it, which I have already, you know, but it doesn't... It's not something that I'm looking forward to always doing, you know what I'm saying? Just because somebody, all the little potheads like it or whatever. I want people to connect more with themselves, because only experience and years, you know, and time past could teach you that.
Yeah.
No matter, have you noticed that no matter what someone's told you, and then once you experience, you're like, dang, they told me when I was like 12. Why didn't I listen? No, you know, and then you experience it, and you're just looking at them at the time. And I always try to listen to my elders, to what they were saying, and applying it was different, though. But I know I took note, and once it came across it, I was like, dang, I was warned, dude. Like, not even just once, but twice, 3-4 times, you know? And that's the living and the learning. You know, that's the living and the learning. That's the part where we just have to let go with and live for the next, you know?
Yeah.
Live for the present, and hopefully tomorrow, I say, you go on to the next one. We try not to stay stuck in the same place, you know?
Yeah, we're gonna go through some shit. There's no other way around it.
Exactly. Yeah, that's inevitable.
There's no other way around it, and I think that's how we grow. We gotta go through some shit. We gotta go through some dark times.
Imagine if everything was just handed and it was that easy. That would be so boring.
We gotta fall a couple times. We gotta experience heartbreaks a couple times. We gotta experience a little bit of joblessness and homelessness a couple times. Broke times, starving times. Yeah, man. Shit.
You get it. It's with age. Like you can't really put that down a really, really young person, you know, to digest because they feel invincible, you know?
Right, and now they do.
exactly. Like we did, you know, that's how I see it.
Haven't reached their 30s yet and not even their 40s yet, you know?
Exactly.
And I think
you haven't woke up with the cramp. You don't know nothing. Yeah,
I think 20s, you're supposed to cause some damage and cause, you're supposed to. You're in your 20s.
Yeah.
And I think 30s gets a little better. And then 40s, I think, is the most important decade. I believe 40s is and I think 50s is important too. But 40s is like,
it's telling. It's very telling. It is.
It's the prime time years. Yeah. It's like, you're supposed to be in your prime in this decade from 40 to 49, you know? So let me ask you this. So fast forward, right? So I meet BJ in 2022 at the Mamba in Huntington Beach. And then we got a chance to chop it up then. Got to know you a little bit then. And then sometimes MCs we split apart because people are busy, live in different cities. Right. You got your own career, I got my own. And then from afar I see BJ starting to travel to like Memphis. Like, how was your experience of rocking Memphis? How was that one?
Yo, dude, it was love, man. That was like, it just felt like everything music should feel like. Now I see why these artists that have gone out of the country even are like stoked. It's just because it's like I said, when you go with the right people and just the opportunity itself, the gratitude of being included in that and going with such humble people and grounded people, it's like, it just makes the experience like wholesome, you know? Waking up to fucking an NPC bumping hard as shit and someone making a beat at 5 a.m, you know, 6 a.m. It was dope. Like, that's the only way I want to be woken up, you know what I'm saying? And the people were freaking so hospitable, man. Like, they were really, it's lovely. It's lovely out there. I had a really somber moment where we went to go eat some chicken, right? Some barbecue chicken. We wanted to try their chicken. So we all went, the whole Super Latin family went, and MC Bundy, everybody, the whole squad. And when we were leaving, we looked up and we saw the Lorraine Motel. And I was like, wait, the Lorraine Motel, isn't that where Martin Luther King got assassinated? Bro, and it was. Like, I got chills. Like, I cried so hard. I didn't think I would. I was so excited. I walked across the street like, oh my God, dude, it is. It looked like just a time capsule. It was, I literally said, and it was already like gonna get dark. And I said, oh my God, is that his car? And when I said that, the lights turned on to the whole building. And I was tripped out, dude. I just felt like he was there. His you could feel sorrow. I don't know, man. It was deep. And I had to walk away. Everyone was crying. Yeah, I had to walk away from that place. But it was a beautiful experience, man. It's called Memphop. Is alive, bro. Like, they invite and are so receiving to all of us.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was dope. It was, I have no complaints. It was a beautiful experience for sure.
Yeah, man. A lot of blues, jazz artists, come from Memphis. Yeah. A lot of originators, a lot of innovators, a lot of Elvis. Elvis swag was from Memphis.
And we're gonna go out there. Well, they went to the. They ended up going into because they were staying there longer. I had to leave a day sooner, and thankfully we left, because then after that there was a. I don't know, a tornado warning or something. We barely made it out.
And I was thinking about, like, Martin Luther King, right? A true visionary, like what he stood for in the 60s pretty much was so fearless and daring. Of course, him and Malcolm X, you know, two separate approach, but what Martin Luther King was doing was, like, you know, a super intelligent black man that and that's why he's a threat. Super intelligent and a true leader that was organizing people. And I feel like Martin Luther King was a visionary in the sense where he pretty much summarized what America has been through, what African Americans have been through. But something that like now in 2024, something tells me that in Martin Luther King's heart, he can also foresee the bullshit that America's gonna go through even after he dies. Like, he knows that this dream probably won't be achieved because racism's still alive today.
That's powerful, man.
He knew what America's about to go through and what we're still going through.
And I was thinking about how crazy what the times we're living in. To taking out the history to tell us who we're up against, pretty much, because they've been against us. And I don't think us as a whole, because if you're not white, you're just like a second class citizen. It doesn't matter now if you're white, I mean, black, brown, you know, it doesn't matter now. Like, I think nowadays, that hatred after Trump. It just resurfaced. Like he really incited a lot of hatred, like that right, that entitlement, and everything that Martin Luther King said couldn't be truer today. Because we're not past that. We're not even remotely fucking past it. Nah, I was thinking the other day, like, how in the fuck do we live in a world where a skin color feels, and it feels, okay, that they have the right to treat another one based off of their skin color. Is that not the wildest shit ever? That blows my mind in itself. Like, so we all have eyes, functioning eyes that function the same, hands, all this stuff, right? But you're going to tell me that because you're more fair-skinned that your value is higher. That shit makes zero sense to me, bro.
Yeah, man.
Like, that's what you're going to go tell God if that's the case? You're going to go tell him, oh, I thought because we was white, we just meant more. To who? To yourselves? But what it is, what they don't understand is their barbarism. How do they say that?
Their barbaric.
Barbarism. Yeah, they just them fools. They're bullies. They're the shit that we can never imagine being. And that's the thing. That's why I believe he showed us the way to stand up, not to be the same. And he meant it 1,000%. We cannot be the same. We can't. Could you imagine how much death there would be if we had that same hatred in our hearts?
Yeah. And not much has changed. We're still struggling out here. You know, we made some few strides as American society. I think we've made some improvements. But there's still some underlying, like, hate and racism for sure going on, man.
But it's strong. The thing is, it's really strong. And they don't care if they're being videotaped or nothing. That's weird shit.
No doubt. So yo, BJ, let me ask you this. I know you're gonna be rocking a trail in Arizona. How do you feel about that? Rocking the festival.
Oh, excited! That shit's gonna be dope. That shit's gonna be real dope.
What date are you going there? March 27th.
On the 23rd.
Okay, dope.
So it'll be again the Gem Work experience with the Super Latin Family Legacy, MC Bundy, Vince One, the Beat Sync. It's gonna be fire. And some people even coming from Memphis, I believe. And they were there at the festival as well.
Wow.
The Gem Work Festival. They came from Memphis and Arizona and friggin' all over. They have really good, I like they work with, you know, people just all around the states. So it's a good opportunity. Like I said, you just have to be present and show up, put your work in.
I love it. Let's talk about your new single with Vince One, Perspective. How did the song come about?
Oh, man, he put the beat on. He's like, I think he'd be good on this. And we're doing a whole year's worth of singles. So we dropped that one. We're about to drop, it's called Hip Hop Party, which was the first one I did on Friday. So we're dropping that one, and that one is featuring Bundy. So Perspective, though, when he showed me it, it's, I don't know if I told you, it's not just 16 bars, it's like 16 and a half bars.
Yeah. 16,
like instead of 2 16s, it's 16 and 8. So we both did that. And so there's 24, 24, and then one hook. We're trying to just bring it different because I noticed people don't have the attention span to do the, you know, the 3 16s and the 8s. They don't have the, if you look at songs now, they're like 2 to 3 minutes long. And meanwhile, back in the day, the way we used to rock them, they were almost like 4 or 5, right? Uh-huh. Just if you're doing hook, verse, you know, whatever. So that was different, which was super cool, because he just allowed me to be myself and trusted that I would stick to topic and stuff. And it just worked out. And be it that, we have a distribution now through Flourish and Prosper. Shout out to them. It's on us to drop music now, you know? So, yeah, we're going to be dropping it once a month. This was a short month, which was supposed to be missed the 29th to drop the hip-hop party. But we'll be posting it soon because we want to get the video going for it. So we're not going to rush things at all. But at the moment, we're trying to drop like one a month. If not two, if it doesn't happen, you know, due to video or whatever. Because it's just a lot of work. So we're trying to stick to it because even then, I have my own project going on and he has his own project going on. So we're kind of just staying busy, man. But Perspective is already dropped. They could catch it on Spotify. And I believe he's going to drop the video today. So really, I'm just waiting on the clearance from them. But that's why I shared the clip with you, which is fine. You could share it. And yeah, man, that song, he produced it. Dope. I know you like the beat. The beat is freaking ridiculous. You know, when the beat talks to you, you can't help but write to it. And it was fairly easy to what he was talking about because he's ridiculous on it. And just the message, man. It's all about the message. As long as we have a good message for the youth, because we still have to, just like people watched out for us, our ancestors watched out for us, we got to do the same thing so that we know that our, you know, the future is bright for everybody. Because it's a little bit scary, man. I ain't going front. I mean, it's not on a negative note. It's just we need to recognize what's out there, you know?
No doubt. So I know you're about women empowerment, too, and an advocate for the ladies. Who are some of the female MCs that you're feeling, like, that you bump in these days? Who you fuck with out here?
Ooh, out here, you know, my homegirls out here. Aside of Lauryn Hill and all the old schools, like the new stuff, I would say that spitting heat that I hear out here. Okay, all my girls, like Polka.
What up, Polka?
They poke a dope as shit.
I got Poco on rocking. The show on Wednesday.
Let's go. She's fire, bro. I love her. Her, Kiddo. Who else is smashing out here?
I wanted to say too, like Poca's voice is so commanding on stage. Like,
yes,
I'm gonna save some of my thoughts for the show, but like, super humble chick. I got a chance to be interviewed by her at the B-side show, and that's how I met her too. We started building through that, but like, when we got a chance to do Beats Rhymes and Fault Lines in Monrovia, I got a chance to see her live for the first time, and very strong voice, kind of like. It's kind of like, and with all due respect, it's kind of like a female Ice Cube. Like, the voice is very strong and commanding, and that's fucking sick. That's what I'm looking for in an MC. Real shit. Yes. You know what I mean? It's the voice. Yeah. But go ahead. So, Poca, who else?
That I see putting it down, I would say Poca, Kiddo, Esperancita. I believe that's sort of the full name. Who else? Rogue Lucky, these are all chicks that I like. Squishy, there's so many of them that like. Oh, of course, Reverie, fucking who else? What is her name? Gavlin. I've done shows with both of them. Just fire, just all the females, dude. I want to just say thank you so much, because I just see them doing their shit, you know what I mean?
Man,
and
they're
not
killing.
Even thinking twice.
They're killing it.
They're coming hard.
They're killing it.
Of course, because she's back and she's in full motherfucking effect. Medusa, yo, mad respect to Medusa. She's been putting out some heat, working with like Chop Louie and they're from Flourish and Prosper as well, so. Fuck yeah, and talk about commanding the stage, bro. She does that shit. Like, she really does run the whole fucking stage. Have you seen her live?
Who?
Medusa.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Plenty of times at the airliner.
Bro.
A lot of classic nights in LA.
Tell me, dude. I seen she was at Gemworks. She did one of the private parties.
What'd you say? The airliner was what?
That was one of my spots. Yeah,
man. Like, the airliner's a classic.
Fucking week. That's fire. So you let me.
I got.
You've been coming out here for a minute.
Huh?
You've been out here for a minute.
Oh, maybe, yeah, man.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's what's up, Marlon.
Shouts to GG. Shouts to everybody at the Underground, Urban Underground, and everybody that threw shows at the airliner. I got a chance to open for Sean Price right before he died at the airliner. Yeah.
Oh, no way, dude.
I got a chance to open for Keith Murray, just him drinking by himself at the bar. Doug C.
Alpha Pop.
Styles of Beyond. Just going through LA. Let me ask you this. Well, first off, when it comes to the ladies too, like, I gotta give a shout out to the homegirls. Shouts to J Ross and shouts to Bonnie Blue. They've been putting it down for decades too. Let me say this. What would be your advice or suggestions for any young females out there trying to get in the music industry in 2024?
I would say, I would just say, don't listen to the outsiders, that motherfucker in your head. Just keep pushing forward. Don't change it up. If you know it worked for you, don't change it up. Because that's one thing that, you know, and always obviously be positive about shit. And know for a fact that no matter what is happening, no matter how you feel about things, that will never change the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So accept things as they are and move according. You know, that's why I say sometimes people will tell you, "Oh, do this, do that," and then, you know, "Why are you doing that?" It's exterior. Do things with your chest, with how you feel internally. You know, and don't bring whatever's outside internally. Kind of like an observer, you know, be an observer. That way you can write about it and be like, this was my perception of that. And to know that that's just everybody, like, I think everybody's truth is different because we all experience everything differently. And it does stem down to emotional intelligence. If we just stay on that high vibrating, positive energy, there's no limits, bro.
No doubt. Yo, it's been a pleasure, DJ, man. Good luck out there on the road in Arizona.
Thank you, brother.
I will see you soon at the next show. I know we got some festivals coming up that we're going to do together this summer, so I'm looking forward to that. Hello?
Yeah, no, I'm here.
You know what I'm saying? thanks for that. Thanks for the plugs. And for everybody tuning in out there, man, especially those who are still rocking the mic after two decades, like, you know, the only thing that will keep you alive here is your genuine love for the music, and that's it, you know. So if you're an artist, if you're a hip-hop artist and you're looking for inspiration, it's okay to walk away from it for a little bit to find yourself and come back, you know. Hip-hop will always be here. But yeah, BJ,
that's good advice.
You know what I'm saying?
It's
okay to take a break. Yeah, it's okay to take a break. It's okay to look for other things for inspiration. You know, it's okay to grow up. It's okay to grow out of it. It's okay to fall out of love. And, you know,
and age is nothing but a number. Then you stop playing with that. If you don't have the child within you, then you lost a big part of who you are, you know?
Amen. Amen.
Yeah.
Any other shout outs, BJ, before we wrap it up?
Well, first and foremost, shout out to you for allowing me this interview. That's what's up, and inviting me on your platform. That's it. You know, I'm super grateful for that. Shout out to the Jamworks Experience. Shout out Vince One, MC Bundy, BeatSync, everybody at Flourish and Prosper. Just every MC that is doing their shit and doing it with heart. Shout out to you. Shout out to my family for always being supportive. And just shout out to God for giving me another day, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, BJ. I'm gonna hit you back with a text, all right?
Okay, for sure, man.
Yo, BJ Blood, we did it. MD Podcast, we did it. Peace and love, y'all. One love.
One. What?